A lot of us are ready for this snow to melt, but before it goes, we can use the snow to help us learn a few things about our homes. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We'll talk about what Mother Nature can teach you about your house. We'll also talk about a change to how the electrical codes are being enforced for new construction. And of course, Bill will answer your questions about the projects you're working on or contemplating around your house. Send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us today. And we're going to find out about a couple of interesting things. We're going to talk about a change to how the electrical code in Iowa is being enforced for new construction.
Energy code. Whoa. My mistake. Bill Whack-a-Mole's here today.
It's not your mistake. I'm the one talking. All right. But first, we're going to talk about how we can use Mother Nature to help us understand how our homes work a little bit better, because we have these lovely blankets of white snow. Seems like pretty much every morning here in Iowa these days. What should we look at, Bill? What can we learn when our roof in particular is covered with snow?
Just like we did this morning, walking here in the studio, looking out the window. What is really neat to do, I just get the biggest kick when we get a heavy frost and we get these first snows. Well, first snows, yet ongoing first snows, is you look at a roof and then you start looking for straight lines or circles in the snow. And especially circles, I like those because that usually, I can tell you almost all the time where a can light is because they didn't insulate above it. So you've got warm air coming from inside the house, hits that roof deck, and it melts the snow off. Well, if it melts the snow off, we've got moisture probably in the attic. And then the really good, well, good because I like seeing them, is right next to the overhang, maybe a couple feet in, you know, right there is where a lot of times that bathroom vent fan, people will tend to run the vent fan out into the soffit, into the overhang. And because technically, if you really read the verbiage, it says you're supposed to take those fans outside. Well, I guess technically that's outside, but that soffit, the overhang there, is usually ventilated. So what happens is that warm, moist air comes out the fan, and then it sits in the soffit, the overhang there, and it goes right back up in your attic because of your attic ventilation. So the more ventilation you have, a lot of times you'll actually have more moisture issues because pulling that warm, moist air up. But you can see sometimes, I was at a place last week, there's 54 units. And I could drive down and tell you exactly where that comes out into that overhang on every one of them because the snow's about 8 inches deep except there. Huh. And it's just, you can see the shingles. And then like straight lines usually are indicative of maybe less insulation in a certain place. But if you can see the rafters a lot, like this morning, you know, driving here, I can see a lot of homes where you could see the individual rafters, they still had snow on them because it had been cold enough where the wood, because it's a, you know, it's a thermal bridge, the wood was staying cold enough and the attic heat loss was coming up and melting the snow off the roof in between the rafters. So I could really tell you exactly how many rafters there were on somebody's house and how they were laid out by looking at those lines.
Okay, and those lines tell us then that the insulation in the attic is not sufficient?
Well, you know, that's what's really neat is the insulation may be sufficient. You know, we could have, in a new house, let's say, we could have 2 feet of insulation up there and we'd still see these things because there wasn't a job of air sealing done. Mm-hmm. And I've been guilty of that in the past. I remember I added probably a foot of insulation on a home, came back the next day, looked up in the attic, and the whole bottom of the roof was frost. And it wasn't like that before. So I said, well, how can this happen? I've added more insulation. Well, what happened was is we didn't air seal where wires came up through the, you know, through the individual walls, any, you know, like around the lights where they were cut through the drywall, all these different places where there was a hole, the warm, moist air would come from inside the house And even no matter how much insulation you had, that moisture would still go up through the insulation. And now that I basically cooled the roof deck off now, I've cut the heat loss, but still the moisture's coming up. And it'd come up and hit that roof deck. Now that it was colder, it would condense. So that's where building science comes in. You really have to understand, you know, moisture flow, vapor, and air. And so a lot of times that will indicate that you maybe have enough insulation, but yet you didn't do a good job of air sealing. And you can actually cause a lot more damage sometimes by adding more insulation.
Well, that's heartening.
It is, but it's but it's neat. I mean, it's just really neat because you can see if you have a can light that's not working right, if your ventilation system isn't running in the right place, it should be coming out the roof. But we still see a lot of builders that vent them it directly into the attic, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And if you go up in the attic and then you may see a lot of moisture damage to the roof sheeting. Roofers can tell you that a lot of times they'll have to replace roof sheeting before they can shingle in certain areas because of poor installed fans.
Okay, so if I go outside this morning and I look at my roof and I see those lines, what do I need to do?
What you want to do is you want to go up in the attic, you know, take a visual measurement of where they are, and then go up into the attic and see what the problem is. And in some not even really that old, but even houses in the 80s, we would have, let's say, an oven range hood. We used to, you know, it seems like now we have the recirculating range hoods to attach to the microwave, so you have no ventilation. But we're trying to get back to where you ventilate that air from the kitchen outside. Well, those usually were attached into a soffit area in your kitchen. And that, you know, that kind of drops down a little bit in the kitchen, like a bulkhead sometimes they call it. Well, in a lot of cases, that was not insulated or sealed at the top. So a couple weeks ago, I went into an attic where it was actually raining in the attic. I just pulled the insulation off to the side a little bit where the range hood was, and you could see down into the overhang, and my glasses fogged over from all this warm, moist air. But you couldn't see it unless you went inside, and all that had to be done was air seal it correctly, re-insulate it, and it was an easy, you know, $10 fix. But yet that could have caused thousands of dollars worth of damage and having drywall fall down from the, you know, moisture from the rain and
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's, you know, it's a cheap infrared camera.
All right, and if you see those circles from can lights, or you see where the vent is, mm-hmm. what do you need to do there?
Yeah, well, what you need to do then is get somebody that's comfortable with getting up in the attic and familiar with how to negotiate up there, because there's when that insulation's in place, there's wiring that you can ruin. You can step on light fixtures. You can step on the drywall, end up, you know, downstairs. And they feel comfortable in a closed space, because a lot of times they're going to have to crawl down into that angle. It's very claustrophobic, and it's dirty and dusty. But they have to understand that maybe nobody's ever going to see it, so you still have to get somebody that has enough pride to do a perfect job to stop that air from coming mm-hmm. up. And that's why, you know, we're always hearing advertisements for, say, Alliant, MidAmerican, and utility companies on rebates and energy saving measures, and the vast majority of it comes down to proper air sealing.
So let's move on to the energy code, and of course we're going to take calls in a couple of minutes. So if you have questions about what you see on your roof, give us a call 866-780-9100. Or if you have questions about other home improvement projects or things you're contemplating, problems you're having in the home, give us a call 866-780-9100. But you've been spending a lot of time recently thinking about the energy code. What's changing?
Well, luckily I've been able to work with some people from different utility companies and the state building code officials office on energy code education. The International Energy Conservation Code of 2009 is statewide code. It is mandatory. Just because builders think that they're out in the country or they're in a small town where maybe a building code isn't enforced, it doesn't mean that the energy code doesn't apply to them. It is statewide. Iowa's a home rule state, which means that communities can adopt building codes, but they don't have a say in whether they adopt the energy code or not. That is statewide. The state attorney general's office has said now that if there's an inspector that does electrical inspections, which is pretty much, I mean, that's everywhere. Now the electrical inspectors at least out in the counties or the building inspectors and communities that have a building code inspector, they have to enforce the energy code. And as of September, David Ruffcorn from the building code official's office, he's been just doing a tremendous amount of work getting everybody involved, the electrical inspectors from the state, getting them trained so that when they go out and do electrical inspections, they're doing the energy code inspections as well. Now, there are people that don't like energy code inspections, but the thing is, the energy codes are built on good building science. A code is a D when you look at grades. The code is, we like to say, it's a basically a floor, and then you work up from there. So when people say, well, I'm not going to build that code, okay, well, that means you're a failing builder. The thing is, though, is what I'm kind of scared of, and why we're trying to get people involved in it is, if a builder builds a home and they do not follow that code, let's say you build a new house, you go down in the basement or wherever your electrical panel is, and there's not a sticker on that panel that says, like, the U values, the R values, the heating and cooling equipment, the size of all that. If that sticker isn't on there, the builder did not build to the applicable codes, which means that he built an illegal home. I mean, all of our building contracts say we will build to all applicable codes and standards. And if it's not built to that, that's what I'm scared of, is somebody's going to get a hold of it and say, okay, now bring it back. Well, it's a little tough. Now, it's not like replacing counters and cabinets. If the right amount of insulation wasn't put in, and it wasn't put in at the correct method or put in to certain standards, I mean, that's the thing, that these inspectors come in and see that the insulation's put in right, that the heating and cooling equipment is sized correctly for your house, not just one that, you know, hey, Bob's house has this, so your house is going to get that. No, it has to be sized correctly, and the right equipment and the right filters have to be used. You know, there's so many things involved with this, but it just comes down to quality construction.
So how long has this energy code been in place?
Oh, actually, I was looking the other day. We've had one here since 92.
But it just hasn't been enforced.
Well, no, because there wasn't any funding for it. I mean, it was really hard. But there are a lot of builders. When we've gone out, Alliant Energy started up, they called it Leader of the Pack this year, and we did sessions last year with Mid-America, Cedar Falls Utilities, Central Iowa Power, and different groups. We went out and we did all around the state, and the builders would come in. It was for builder trainings. And it was amazing. Of course, it was kind of like preaching to the choir. The builders that came in, it was amazing how far above the code some of these guys were doing, because they consider building homes a craft. They take a lot of pride, and they take a lot of pride in staying up on information. They're not doing it, well, this is the way we've always done it for the last 20 years business. 20 years ago, we didn't have the materials. We didn't have the equipment that we have now. And they ask, well, you know, we spend so much more time inside than we did 20 years ago. So we have to look at indoor air quality. There's all these things intertwined with the energy code.
Well, we'll talk more about that in a moment. And, of course, we'll be answering your questions as well. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. And we've been talking about the energy code a little bit. There is a change to enforcement. It's going to be enforced. It is being enforced.
Yes,
for,
it is.
For the first time since it came about in 1992.
Yeah.
So if you are building a new home, or if you're putting an addition on your home, what is your responsibility with the energy code?
Your responsibility is to make sure that the builder is going to build to that code and make sure that's in the contract, and that all of the subcontractors understand their relationship and their responsibilities to meet this code as well. The heating and cooling people, they're probably the hardest hit as far as, a learning curve right now, because their ductwork design, their sizing design, if we're not getting a certain amount of, like, say, cubic feet per minute back to a bedroom, it comes back to their design. And make sure that the code official in your area is inspecting. And if not, there's a prescriptive method, there's a performance method. There's a trade-off method. I like the performance method because it brings a third party in, like a home energy ratings a system person. They come in and they do blower door tests, and then they can tell exactly how the house is going to operate. They come in and inspect, and it's well worth the money, I feel, because the thing about everything involved with the energy code, that's not stuff that you remodel later on or change out. This is stuff that you have to live with for the life of the home. You know, you don't, I mean, how often do remodelers come in and change out the, you know, the caulking, flexible caulking, not just caulking, but flexible caulking between framing members? They don't. So
right.
You only get one shot at a lot of this, and you want it done right. If I'm paying for a house, I want it done right.
And the biggest message here is to contractors.
Yes, it is. And there are a lot of good contractors out there that are ahead of the game, but still, there's still some we got to keep dragging because it's, well, you know, it's always been this way. I just really get tired of that argument, or it's too much of a cost. Well, for the life of the house, if you actually figure the energy savings against, you know, in your long mortgage, it usually is less money a month when you figure utility and your payment together. So don't give me that. And, you know, and you look at, you know, decisions like granite countertops, you know, that are going to be changed out, different types of flooring. You know, there's always trade-offs, but the bones of the house, the indoor air quality of the house, the safety of the house, the durability, the sustainability of that house depends on that you follow the codes.
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to, I just don't want to beat this table anymore, but it's just we have to do it right, and it's too bad that we have to have somebody oversee us to make it do us right.
All right. Well, let's get to the phones. We have a lot of people who want to ask questions. Claudette is on the line first from Ellsworth. Hello, Claudette.
Good morning.
Hi.
Morning.
What's your question?
Well, I'm first of all going to say to Mr. McAnally, I'm only 45 minutes from Fort Dodge, and if he would like to bring students over here to see my issue, that would be great.
Hey, thanks. As long as there's cookies, I'll be there.
Hey, name your flavor. Okay, you're talking about canned lights and ceiling.
Uh-huh.
And in my kitchen, I have canned lights. Now, I have a vaulted ceiling, so there's no attic access above.
Right.
And I'm getting some condensation, and I get little water droplets coming down from those canned lights.
Yep.
And my husband's a real good do-it-yourselfer, and we've talked about what are we going to put in there, and how are we going to handle this situation?
Those, you know, after it's installed in a vaulted light, sometimes it's kind of tough. But depending on how the fixture was installed, you can pull those out because, first of all, for the code, they should be IC rated. And if you pull the bulb out, you should see a sticker, and it might say IC rated on it. But you can replace it with an airtight, as well as airtight as they can make them, an airtight light fixture. But the problem is, if it's a vaulted ceiling, is you may not have enough R value up above that can light. And you're still going to have moisture and condensation because it's just heating up the you know, the roof sheeting, condensing, and then the water drips down to that light.
What is R value?
R value is resistance to heat flow.
Okay.
And so materials are rated like, say, 6 inches of fiberglass is roughly an R19. 1 inch of foam is an R5. Different materials have different R values. But it all comes down to installed R value. So like, let's say that your insulation and that vaulted ceiling is fiberglass. If you have it open to the ridge where there's attic ventilation, cold air can drop to that ridge. Fiberglass is all it is. It's not an air sealer whatsoever. It's just a really good filter. The cold air will drop and come right to that fiberglass, hit that warm light. And warm always goes to cold. It hits that, condenses, and then she's got dripping. So you really almost have to. It's an individual kind of basis. Why don't you, could she leave her number
sure,
here?
Sure. Claudette, I'll put you on hold, and our producer, Sarah, will take down your number, and Bill will be in touch. Is
okay,
that what you're about to say, Bill?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, I was.
I have one more comment that, you know, I'm a rural resident.
Uh-huh.
And because we do not get our heating from the electrical suppliers, we can't get an energy. We can't have them come in and do an energy audit on our house because you have to get your heat source from them.
Yeah, you're in one of those, probably one of those split ones. Who supplies your gas?
We get it from the local co-op.
Oh,
propane.
Oh,
heat.
Propane. Oh, nuts. Okay. Well, you know, your electrical. So the electrical won't do it on the cooling side, huh? They won't give an energy audit for you.
Right.
Okay, well, there are some firms, Energy Raiders, HERS Energy Raiders, that will come and do one for you. You can Google that from the state of Iowa. But, you know, the thing is, I would start asking around in your local area Ask an REC in your area, maybe, that, you know, who do they use? Who do they recommend? They'll be glad to, you know, recommend somebody to you, even though if you're not in your area. But the propane person may also have someone that does ratings come in and does an energy audit for you. But otherwise, you may have to pay for one. They're usually, you know, $500 or so for a really good one, five to okay. six.
Well, just let me know what flavor cookies.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
All right, stay on the line for a moment, yeah. Claudette.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next up, Bob is on the line in somewhere in Western Iowa. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thank you. I have a old 100-year-old four-square farmhouse, and I recently put a new roof on it, but they did not put the lightning rods back up, and I asked him why, and he said nobody ever does anymore.
Yeah.
And when you look at new construction, you rarely see a house anymore with lightning rods.
Right.
Why is that? What's the current thinking on lightning rods? Do you recommend them or not?
I don't. I mean, I don't, but that's just me personally. I just don't want another thing up there causing issues, the holes in my roof. A lot of it is because the homes now are grounded correctly. When they were originally built, you know, they didn't have a grounding system. They didn't have the ground rods. They just, you know, prayed that they wouldn't get smacked by some lightning. There is a contingency of people, though, that are trying to get lightning rods put back. You know, I think your insurance carrier may have an opinion on whether they want to have something sticking up that could possibly draw lightning. But that's usually why, and every contract that I've ever dealt with, electrical contractor, does not put them back up because they put in a better grounding system.
Well, now in my case with that 100-year-old house, would that not have the proper grounding system?
Well, have you updated the wiring since then?
Oh, partly, wherever it was needed. When we bought the house 30 years ago, they did some electrical work in it, but I couldn't tell you, you know, anything about any grounding system or anything.
Are you still using the old knob and tube, the black wiring on the porcelain knobs?
Yes, there is some of that.
Okay, I would have an electrician come out and take a look at that anyway.
Okay.
Just for safety-wise, after having a lot of these sessions, I've been so lucky to be able to be involved in this, getting to meet builders all around the state of Iowa and asking them what they're seeing. I would get an electrician, just for the sake of mine, to come in and take a look at your wiring anyway, because of the equipment that we now are putting on this old wiring system. It was never designed to have the type of appliances that we have. And I would have a good electrician come out and take a look at it anyway. You may have an inadequate ground system even now that may damage your equipment, your appliances. So peace of mind, I would have an electrician come out and look at it.
All right, Bob. Thanks a lot for your call.
That's
We're going to go on next to Craig in Moline, Illinois. Hi, Craig.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Okay, Mr. McAnally, my question is, it's kind of two-part, but with the same issue. I have an older home also, probably around 1910, and it has vermiculite insulation in the ceiling. And what I was wondering about is not only the qualitative value of it, our value, but also is it a health concern, because I was told that it was asbestos.
Yeah, it's a huge, it's vermiculite, especially, you know, I don't know exactly over in your area, but especially here in Iowa, and I'm sure it's over in your areas, you know, along the, you know, the borders of Iowa. Most of the vermiculite that we had came from mines out in Montana, then it was shipped to Minneapolis, and then it was used for attic insulation and insulation in concrete block foundations and things. And the odds of it having asbestos, you know, are so doggone high that stuff just scares the dickens out of me. I would not touch it. I don't even want to look at it, you know. If you were going to have some, you know, have anybody do anything with that old vermiculite, I would have somebody that is an asbestos mitigation person do that. The last thing you want to do is walk through it and stir it up and make a dust. That is the absolute worst thing you can do with vermiculite. But it is a good insulation, and it's fireproof insulation, and that's why we used it. But for health, especially in the Midwest here, it's very scary. And you can Google a lot of it. If you really want to scare yourself, you can Google that. Minneapolis asbestos and then vermiculite, and you'll get all kinds of horror stories.
Okay, and you could take in a sample have it checked. I mean, would that be any?
I wouldn't even bother doing that because you could, but I would be pretty positive that it would have asbestos in it. You know, cause asbestosis.
All right, well, I'm going to have to check into that then.
I would.
It.
Yeah, please don't let anybody up there.
All right, Craig, thanks a lot for your call.
Yep, thanks, Craig.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we have a lot of calls on the line. We also have a lot of emails coming in. So let's do a couple of emails, and then we'll get back to the phone. This is from Becca in Boone. She says, our house started developing hairline cracks along the drywall seams in the fall. They're vertical and horizontal along the seams, and for the most part have not gotten larger. But we did notice that one in the upstairs, along where the wall and ceiling meet, seems to have widened slightly. We seem to have at least one crack in every room in the house. The previous owners did the drywall themselves. We did have a professional look at the foundation, and he said there was no sign of settling or other problems there. What would you recommend as the next step in diagnosing any underlying problem before repairing the drywall? Are there any other signs we should look for?
Yeah, ones on the ceilings, what I would do is wait now until it warms. The ones on the ceilings, if they close, what you have is ceiling and wall partition uplift or truss uplift. Is in Iowa, in the Midwest, we usually have conditions where the bottom cord, the bottom board, which would be like a ceiling joist on a truss style roof, they tend to heave when it's cold. And so it will arch up. And if the drywall was not put in according to the instructions that come with the trusses, or put on by someone that, you know, didn't know how it was supposed to be attached to the trusses, that you'll always have cracks every winter probably. And if there's no vapor retarder on the ceiling, then it just complicates things, because when that opens up, now the warm air from inside the room goes through that crack, goes up in the attic. And then you really have some issues. The ones on the corners, especially if they're the outside wall, exterior wall, an inside corner of an exterior wall, if their cracks are there, that's probably because there's not enough insulation in those corners, because we used to frame them. We didn't really think about insulation very much in the corners of houses back in the day. But the wood tends to dry and get wet and dry and get wet, and then they tend to dry at different rates, and so a lot of times the drywall tape will crack, and because of the wood drying, it has nothing to do with the poor drywall. It can only do so much, but wood, when it does get cold and warm and wet and dry, moves, and then it'll take the tape with it. But the ones on the ceiling, if you just check on some information on truss uplift, there are ways that you can go back in the attic in the spring or in the summer. Usually spring is a little cooler. And you can put some attachments over the top of the walls to hold the drywall down so it will kind of flex and not raise. The other thing is it's going to give you a chance now to get up there and do some good air sealing.
All right. Another email. This is from Lindsay. I have a question about heating a home. I have a gas heater in my home. I've heard that it's better to leave your heat on low, 65 degrees all day while you're at work, instead of turning the heat completely off while you're at work in order to save money. Is that true?
You can do a lot of research on it. And it's like 50-50, and it really comes down to the house. It depends on how efficient the house is, because if the house isn't very efficient, if you turn your thermostat down, that poor thing maybe dropped down to 45 by the time you get home, or other houses might only drop a couple degrees. So there are studies that set back thermostats do save you money, but then there's other ones where maybe they really don't. It's the individual comforts, the individual house. I like to keep mine cool anyway. I'd like to leave mine at 65 all the time, winter, summer, whatever. But it really depends on how leaky the house is. We can't.
Well, turning it down to 65, that seems high for when no one's in the house.
Well, that may be, but then it depends on how long does it take
to bring it back up.
Because once if you're gone, let's say if you're gone for 10 hours or 11 hours, then everything that's in the house, all the materials then drop in temperature too. So you've got to bring the temperature up and all that mass up at the same time. That's where what you want to do is try 1 month with it this way, try another month, and then see how your house, your individual house and your individual living style will work.
All right.
Yeah, that's always been a sneaky question to ask.
So, Lindsay,
there's
you tested it out. You test it out and let us know.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, Colby's on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Colby.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Bill.
What's your question?
Morning.
Good morning, Charity. Let's see. I've got a very cold bathroom. The tile is almost too cold to walk on. Last summer, I took down the sheetrock. A portion of the bathroom was over the garage, which is the first mistake that I made.
Okay.
I took down the sheetrock in the garage. I got 1-inch foam board, cut it to size to fit between the floor joists, fitted above the water pipes, which are also in the garage, and froze last year. Put R30 in, and then put the sheetrock back up and taped it and mudded it. The garage is anyway, the bathroom is colder, and my wife is having a fit. It's colder than it was last year. I thought I solved the problem. A couple of things. I cannot figure out where the cold air is coming from because that section of the house is very, very cold. The garage can be 32 or 33, and if I put a thermometer up, if I drill a hole and put a thermometer up into that space that I heavily insulated, it's 10 degrees colder in that space than it is in the garage.
Okay, yeah. we need to take a break here. So stay on the line, Colby, and we will try to solve this problem in just a moment. Remember all those details, okay, Bill? You got to hold on to them for 2 minutes.
I'm on the ball.
It is Home Improvement Day today on Talk of Iowa. You're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can also send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Home Improvement expert Bill McAnally is here with us today. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us today. And let's get back to Colby's problem with a very, very cold bathroom, tile floor, almost too cold to walk on. His wife is having a fit. Bill,
what can
he do?
I hope Dave Ruffcorn's listening because according to the International Energy Conservation Code 402.4, under air leakage, which is mandatory. I love this.
You're scaring me.
This is good. I love it when the, you know, and I've been around situations just like yours, and a lot of times it's coming from the side.
Yes.
And there's an air leak somewhere in the side that's driving air through there, and that now that you've insulated it, it's the insulation is doing exactly what it's supposed to do.
Exactly. I'm there.
Yeah. So
I put the thermometer in there and went, you got to be kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's coming from either end. There's a leak like an air leak, and it could be sneaking in by the bathtub unit.
Yes, the bathtub. Let me add another. I was cleaning the bathtub, this particular bathtub, and the water would not go down the drain. And I thought, there's stuff in there. And my daughter was home from college over the Thanksgiving holidays, and she took a bath, and it was fine. And I'm thinking, okay, the cats knocked all of the stuff into the, you know, we have plants around the tub. So I'm thinking all the stones and stuff.
Sure.
Well, no, it was frozen.
Yes. Yep.
Can you come and visit me? I'll make steak and potatoes, not cookies.
No, Charity said we're going on the road.
Talk of Iowa on the road. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, it's coming in over on the side.
How do I find it, Bill?
If you can.
So how do you find it?
Well, if you know of anybody that has a smoke pencil, or you can even use incense. You know, some people will use incense. Charity, you know what I'm talking about. That incense, but some builders have smoke pencils, and then they can see which way it's moving.
Inside the house, or
you put it in, like you kind of hold it down next to the cavity. If you can get back into the cavity, you're going to have to anyway. But that was a groan. Yeah. If you can somehow borrow, you said you have a temperature sensor.
Yes.
The laser, like a laser one.
Yes.
Perfect. Go on the outside, and you may be able to tell a difference on the band joist, the rim joist area, straight out from your end of your floor joist. You may be able to see a temperature difference there.
Okay.
If you can get an access, you should have an access panel to that drain anyway. There should be an access panel there, and you may be able to get your hand in there and point that and get different temperatures. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll take my digital camera that I can only get my hand up in there, and I'll take a picture left or right, and the flash will light it up enough so I can see what's going on.
Okay. Is an infrared camera expensive, and is there someone who will do that for me?
Yes, they are expensive, and yes, there's somebody that'll do that for you.
Okay.
You know, some of the home inspectors will do just that, but that also is kind of tricky. A lot of people think it's just very easy diagnostics, but it usually takes at least a week-long class to understand really what you're looking at.
Okay.
If there is an energy auditor in your area or a HERS rater in your area, I would get a hold of them. That's a really neat. I'm sorry that it's happening to you, but it's a neat situation because it proves how important that air sealing is.
Well, I'm sure Colby's happy to be.
Now he's mad at
happy
me. Now,
to be an example. Colby, thank you so much for your
Thanks,
call.
Thanks, Colby.
Let's move on to Jan in Atlantic. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I have a Craftsman bungalow house from 1927, which has gable roof. In the gabled side overhang, I have placed fiberglass, faced FACED fiberglass insulation R19, so that the facing is on the top and the fiberglass is on the joist. Is this the right way to have laid this insulation?
This is in the attic?
This is in the, you know, they have long attics
right.
In the gable area. Yes.
Yes, it is, but here's another case in those particular houses is... For craft face paper to work, it has to be stapled onto the face of the ceiling joist. It can't be stapled to the sides. And even though it says that it's a vapor retarder, it's not an air sealer, that's for sure. And in cases, just to let you know, in the cases where I've worked with that, when I've pulled that out of the attic, the whole bottom of the roof is frost. So
bottom of the roof?
Yes.
Well, now, a man came from Energy Doctor and put in this silvery paper stuff all along in there. Is that along the edge of the roof, in other words,
okay.
The slant?
Let's see. I'm trying to tactfully how to do this. Do you have access to the Internet?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like you to Google FTC for Federal Trade Commission.
Okay.
And then hit... R values.
R values, okay, huh?
And,
yeah, I know about R values.
Okay,
yeah.
and then radiant barriers.
Okay.
A company was just last month fined $350,000 by the Federal Trade Commission. Energy Efficiency Solutions is the name of the company.
Okay.
For inflated R values and claims on energy savings, because sometimes what happens if the barrier's not placed correctly, claims of energy efficiency you can get from the Department of Energy and the Federal Trade Commission, but it could possibly be causing issues with moisture and air movement at the same time.
I haven't seen any problems as far as that. I've been in the attics and looked.
Okay.
And I also made sure that there were on the soffit edges all on, you know, where the farthest down point of the of the roof, that air is allowed to flow. So there's air coming through the edge.
Okay, so that air then is coming up, and then it's going to go right through your insulation then?
Yeah.
Okay, so now you're going to have cold air. Basically what's happening is you're going to have cold air flowing through that fiberglass, and really the fiberglass isn't going to be doing much except filtering the cold air.
Okay, well,
So you need to have someone that has gone through, BPI training.
BPI standing for?
Building Performance Institute.
Okay.
Or a person that has gone through a lot of training for building science. Because that putting fiberglass in an area where you're trying to insulate, and when you have air going through, it's kind of like Colby's issue. You can put all the fiberglass in the world in here, but if you don't stop the air, fiberglass can't do its job.
Well, the concern that I had about air quality and air control, infiltration, was moisture. You know, I'm more concerned about mold issues because I have asthma, and any kind of poor quality air from the effects of moisture on old wood and moisture on insulation and whatever.
Yes, because there's a whole system to this. You have to be able to stop the air for that fiberglass to work, and so. You need to have somebody come in and look at your situation, and fiberglass bats probably isn't the product that you should be putting in that situation.
Well,
it depends on your home. There's if it's put in correctly, the fiberglass will work, but it has to have some baffles up above it possibly. You know, I can't tell you because I'm not seeing it, but there are cases where maybe a spray foam will work, cases where cellulose will work. A lot of cases in the bungalows, what they do is they use sheet foam instead, 4x8 sheets, so you can cut them to any size you want. but they will put that on the bottom and use that as an air barrier, as a vapor retarder, and as insulation. And then the air in the attic between the rafters can act like it was designed back in the, you know, in the 20s and 30s to have air flowing through it, so that you don't have these issues of condensation. Because like we always try to say is, you know, no matter what happens, if you've got an air leak and you've got warm air and a cold surface, you're going to have condensation. So, and in certain cases, you can have mold growth growing where you can't see it. So
Jan needs to get help.
Yeah, you need to get somebody that understands building science and someone that's not just trying to sell you a product, but sell you the right product for your situation.
All right, Jan.
Yep, okay.
Thank you so much for your call and good luck.
Yep, good luck on that one.
All right.
Those are craftsmen. Craftsmen are notorious because they have knee wall situations and they're a nightmare.
They look cool.
They are. They're a beautiful house.
Yeah.
I love them.
John is on the line next from Iowa City. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi.
Morning.
What's your question?
I sent an email about this too, so you can disregard that. I have an older brick house, 1880 brick house, not brick veneer, but just brick construction. I've got a couple places where there's plaster flaking off on the inside of the walls, which I assume is moisture drive through the brick.
Yeah.
And I think I've addressed both of them. In one case, it was just a landscaping issue. In another case, there were some bricks that were going to be used as pavers that were stacked up against the outside of the house.
Okay.
But my question is, I would like to, the extent it's possible, to improve the energy efficiency of this house. And I've gotten sort of conflicting advice about how to insulate on the inside or whatever because of that concern about the moisture drive back and forth through the masonry.
Sure. Do you want to be able to see the inside brick, the plaster?
My wife does.
So you're going to have to make a choice then. Do you want to look at the outside or do you want to look at the inside, I guess? You want to keep the outside looking the way it is, right?
Right, right.
Okay, well, then you're going to have to insulate on the interior. And one house I did quite a few years ago, we had the exact same situation. It was a solid brick. It was 18 inches thick. And what we did is we lined the inside with foam, sheets of foam, air sealed it. And it was amazing how that house performed. And the nice thing is when you do it all to the inside, all of the trim work can be reused. You know, you'll have to pull it off.
Right.
But at least when you add something to the inside, the measurements become shorter. So at least you can reuse your trim. The only thing is you have to add, you know, some extension jams to the windows. And this particular house had walnut. So
you just put rigid foam board on the interior surface and then did some framing over that?
Yeah, yeah. There are some other products available out there. What I would do is Google Deep Energy Retrofit.
Deep Energy Retrofit?
Yep, and then because there's a lot of information on that particular there right now because a lot of people are trying to retrofit these older homes exactly the way you are, and a lot of times they make the decision to do it on the outside. But this gives you a chance if you know to add wiring, to update the inside.
Right, right.
But you may want the only thing is in these old homes, you may want to bring an engineer in because it depends on what type of brick that's in that wall. Because now we're keeping it on the cold side. There's no warmth ever getting into the brick from the inside.
Right.
So you may want to have an engineer just take a look at a cross section of that wall and make sure that what you're doing is not going to damage the brick and its ability to stay together over a long period of time.
Okay. Yeah. I will do that. And then just one other quick question. I also own a 1906 four-square, and I am considering doing spray foam insulation in the attic to make the attic a conditioned space.
Uh-huh.
Do you have any guidelines or any place I can look about how I need to make that transition at the bottom end of the rafter to the top of the wall to make sure that I am really closing that off to get that conditioned space effect?
Your contractor, your foam insulator, that's a good way to rule out who can't do it and who knows how to do it is to ask them how that particular detail is going to be handled by them, because for that system to work correctly, that has to be handled by them. There are some issues with foam insulation. It's not the product, it's the installer. And we've found this throughout the state when we're doing these trainings, is the only time we see bad foam jobs is because the installer hasn't gone through the right training. And they have to know, there's so many things to know about the temperature of the surface, the humidity, the type of material that you're spraying it on. I would really do an interview like you're going to get a son-in-law, basically. Let's say you're going to go to the son-in-law shop, and I would do interviews like nobody's business to find out who is the best trained and get a lot of information on jobs that they've done in the past, because it is. I mean, it's a great product, and I know some really good installers, but there are some guys kind of ruining it right now for them. But that would be a key question to ask him. Okay, how are you going to handle this particular spot in this house so that this foam is going to work correctly and I'm not going to have any moisture issues?
All right, John, thanks for your call.
That's
good.
Good question,
too. Heather in Iowa City. Quickly, Heather, what's your question?
I just have a quick question. We bought a 1950s ranch last summer, and we have radiant heat and ceiling. And I wanted to talk about the efficiency of that versus radiant heat and floors. My question was, is it more efficient? Is it less efficient?
Well, they should be the same efficiency.
I've read things, though, that have said that actually floors sometimes can be colder because half of the heat goes into the ground.
So you're on a slab?
Yes.
Okay. No basement. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, it can, because now when you do radiant, heat, there's always at least 2 inches of foam underneath it and the floor to keep it from going down into the ground. So, yes, because radiant heat, basically heats objects. So it really is what it does. And you feel warmer a lot of times because your head is up there where the radiant heat is, if it's in a ceiling situation. So, I mean, if in equal conditions, they're the same. It just depends where the placement is. But, yeah, the one in the floor is not going to be as efficient because a lot of it is going back to the ground, and it's always fighting that 50 degrees someplace where you're losing it.
All right.
There are upgraded ones. I'd Google. There's some really new ceiling. I'm sorry, Chair. There's some really new radiant panels for ceilings now.
Okay. Heather, thank you so much for your call. There are so many questions we're not going to get to this hour. I apologize for that. Here's the last short one. This is from Julie in Iowa City. For a house built in 1978, is it safe to assume the popcorn ceilings don't have asbestos, or would it be best to buy a kit and test?
I'd have it tested. With 78 is kind of a borderline year, because that's
right.
Basically when lead, before that it was lead paint, and after that it probably wasn't. But I would get a check. Those old heavy popcorn are kind of scary.
All right.
Good one to
check. All right. And sorry if we didn't get to your question today. Bill will be back next month. So
there we
to
go.
Answer a lot more questions. Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime. We'd love to hear your reaction to things you hear on the show. We'd love to hear your suggestions about things you'd like to hear on the show. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, a sure sign of spring. Horticulture Day is back to weekly on Talk of Iowa. You know spring is coming now. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.